Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name's Nancy Morris, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I can't think of anything to say. And then over here, I have a million things going on inside my head, but I can't think of anything to say. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. June, thank you for asking me. Jerry, thanks for following up. Myra's my hostess. The other speakers were fantastic. Steve and Harold, of course, they had to leave, but, you know. And Sue, thank you, and the Al-Anon speaker and the long-timers. I see you over there. Thank you so much. It's a really an honor to be here. I had a good surprise. First of all, it's really hard for me to be the last speaker because I just compared myself all weekend to the other speakers. And I'm falling up, you know, it's coming up short there. But they were terrific. But I had a really good experience this morning. I went over there to get, you know, some juice, and I just sat down at a table randomly, and I got to meet Gloria and sit and chat with her. She's absolutely beautiful. And I got her phone number. You know what she told me? That she just said somebody just called her, I guess that was you, and said, Gloria, do you want to go to a meeting today? And she said yes. And here they are today. And I suppose that's what she's been doing for her 65 years of sobriety, is saying yes. Let's go. We call it, you know, get in the car and come do what we're doing. Go with us. And the other day I was with a friend of mine. We were actually getting pedicures, and we were talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, and the ladies who were working on us said, how do, when people come in, how do they quit drinking? What gets rid of the cravings? And, you know, it's a little bit hard to explain, but we know. It's like, come join us, do what we're doing, get in the car, say yes, go to meetings, make some friends. I've got some friends right here. We've been through a lot together. Both sides, you know, but you say yes, you sit in coffee shops after meetings, you talk your crazy talk with your friends, you get a sponsor, you tell your friends things that you're not going to tell your sponsor yet, but you're going to tell them, I'm going to try this out on you. But it was an honor meeting you this morning, Gloria, and thank you so much for chatting with me. Yeah, and the man who brought me to my very first meeting is sitting right up here. I call him my starter husband. And I always say he could tell my story much better than I can tell it. Some of it I can remember, you know, clearly, and some I can't. But Joe and I were living in Ventura County in Newbury Park when I got sober. And we were fortunate enough to adopt three boys from Ventura County. Twins and then another boy, but excuse me, I'm dry. Yeah, a little bit. Not as dry as Gloria. No, she's not dry. She's sober. I'll tell you what, Gloria's got it going on. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you. But I remember when you know, Joe and I were living out here, and we wanted to start a family. And when we got twins right off, and then we got a call a couple years later for the third one. And by that time, I had been in the house with the kids now doing my drinking. Early on, I could do my drinking out, you know, and I didn't notice it so much. But I'm pretty much confined to the house with these two little kids. And now I get a call, we can get a third one. All I thought when I got that call, Joe was at work, and I thought, oh, good, Joe's not going to be mad at me for what I did last night, because we're going to get a baby. And on the other side, I didn't want to go get him because I already knew I couldn't quit drinking. And I saw no hope that I would ever quit drinking, because I tried for a long time. When I'd get up every day, I don't want to take a drink. I don't want to. I'd stand in front of a crucifix and I would pray. I don't want to take a drink. And yet, you know, just about as soon as he would leave to go to work in the morning, I'd decide I could just have one drink. Just one drink, that's all I need. And it was never one drink. And So I'll back up a little bit to, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I didn't really grow up because I'm still working on that. You know, I still go to a lot of meetings, and I do have 51 years. It's because I'm still alive and I'm an alcoholic, and there's still a lot of stuff that goes on up here. But I was born in Los Angeles, and I grew up in this family with five brothers, one sister, a mother and a father, and everybody's alcoholic except my mother. And she went to one Al-Anon meeting, and she never went back because she found out that, you know, she had to work on herself and not just talk about us. So she decided to just stick around and try to, you know, get us all to behave. So two older brothers, myself, three younger brothers, and then my sister was 12 years younger. My sister has 21 years of sobriety, and she's very active in AA in Northern California. My brothers came around. Joe used to call my brothers his lower companions. But anyway, you know, there was a lot of chaos in this house growing up. There was just a lot of stuff going on all the time with all that drinking. And I wish that I had been able to make better amends to my parents before they passed away, because we wrecked the house, we wrecked their cars, and we didn't, you know, we laughed about it. And we always thought it was funny. And when my parents would try to go out, the police, they'd come home, the police would be there. There was just always something crazy going on in the house. There were, you know, too many kids, I thought. And I went across the street to a stable where there were some horses, and I would ride up there, and there were cowboys there. I was 15 years old, and I would flirt the best I could. I didn't have a boyfriend. I went to Catholic school, and I kind of wanted to have a boyfriend, but I really wasn't like the little girly girl. And all the boys would ask me to get phone numbers of the girls. That's what they would ask me. And so I would give them my own phone number. But it didn't do me much good because, you know, we didn't have cell phones and all that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't get the girls' phone numbers. But I did want to have a boyfriend. And one time I gave myself a hickey with a vacuum hose so I could pretend that I had a boyfriend. But so I would go up to the stable and I would hang out up there, and I really just I just craved attention. I wanted people to notice me. I wanted somebody to love me. And so the horseshoer lived up there in this little shack, and he dared me to come up there in the middle of the night. And I could never turn down a dare to this day, so I have to be very careful. But you know, he dared me to come up there in the middle of the night, and I climbed out my window. It was a little hard to do, and with all those people living in this small house. And I went up there, and I guess we had sex because I ended up getting pregnant. And that was my first experience. I didn't have any friends. I didn't talk to my mother. And so, you know, it took them a little while to figure out. I was just lost. I didn't know what to do or who. I had nobody to turn to. And so I wore a little green plaid skirt as my, you know, uniform to Catholic school. And so I was outgrowing it, and pretty, you know, my parents figured out what was going on. And back then, it was 1960, they just sent us away, the bad girls. You're going to go away, you have this baby, give him up for adoption, and then come back and pretend like nothing happened. That's how it was. So I did that. I came back and went to a different school, high school. I found the kids who drank, and I never really cared about school. And so I just, you know, drank with the kids and barely got by and got in trouble because people dared me to do things, and I did them. And I cheated and got people to do my test papers for me and things like that. And so you know, I the night of graduation, I was behind a gas station with my friends Carol and Paul, and we were just drinking vodka out of bottles, and kind of making fun. What I did my whole life, because I couldn't do what other people were doing, or I didn't feel like I measured up to them. I would make fun of everybody. I would just say I don't care, and I don't care. Look at them. I don't like them anyway. I did that for many, many years. So so that was that. And then I just kind of, I just kind of wandered through life. I want to back up for a minute because when I, you know, was first talking and I was talking about that I don't measure up. And I have this thing, I hear people talk, and this is what I seem to hear all the time. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was homeless, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got my master's degree. That's what I hear all the time. And so I'm still working on that. I haven't actually started, but, I just cringe, and that just seems to be a really sore spot for me because, we're not all the same. We do different things. It's just never been my thing. I used to try to go to classes. I went to some psychology classes, and all the students were crazy, and so I didn't like doing that, and, I do art classes and Spanish classes, and I play pickleball, and, I just do other things, but so one night, and this was like 21 years ago that this happened, because I woke up and I was up or something. Sometimes I'm up very late thinking. I have a lot of to think about, and it was really weighing heavy, very heavy on me that I had no career, and everybody else has a career and you don't. What is wrong with you? You know, there's a lot goes on late at night inside my head, and so I was really, really upset. And I screamed out, God, help me, help me. And God sent me an email right then, right after that. So that really happened. And then I had been on my computer, and I went back on after I screamed that out. And there was an email from a person that I didn't know. And his name is Paul. And the email said, my name is Paul. You spoke in Fargo in May, and this was July when he sent me the email. You spoke in Fargo in May, and I was at that meeting, and I just followed a girl there, and I had no intention of getting sober. I was either going to do myself in the next day or check into a mental institution, and I heard you talk, and I identified with what you said. And I'm now 3 months sober. And so that was God telling me that I am doing what I am supposed to be doing. I have always been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is really like my life. I mean, I love it. I feel so grateful that it is this way for me. But so Paul and I, we've stayed in touch. I just talked to him the other day. He has 21 years of sobriety. And, but that's, I call that my email from God, because who am I? I don't know what, I compare myself, quite a bit, and I don't measure up. But I've had some, interesting jobs and careers along the way. Like, there was a prayer I made up along the way. By the way, I get a little disjointed up here. You probably know that already, so it's okay, because I cannot sit down and plan out a talk. It just comes out, and I can't really think about it that much ahead of time. Whatever comes out. But how should I earn a living, and that kind of stuff. And so I made up this prayer, and it said, I've changed my prayers along over the years to thank you, God. Instead of saying, please give me something, I say thank you for. So I said, thank you for helping me to find a way to earn a living that is suited to my nature that will best serve you and others. So that seemed to cover it, And a little bit, later on in my life, I was already in my late 40s, I got a job as a flight attendant. That's the perfect job for me. I get to go all over the place, and I'm never in one place, because I had some office jobs, and they would actually tie me to my chair. and they actually put notes on the back of my chair. Do not talk to Nancy. And I just cannot sit there. So God just found this absolute perfect job for me as a flight attendant. And another part about that was early on in my sobriety, I was just filled with self-pity. And I would, you know, you're doing this, you're doing that. I was jealous, envious, the car, your car is better than mine, you have more money, you have a better job, you know, you have a better house and all that kind of stuff. And where was I? I don't know where I was going with that, but early on in my sobriety, I think, oh, I know what I want to say, and then it got worse. Thank you, Sue. So, and then it got worser. But so, you know, I do jump around, and I've had, you know, these different jobs. I retired as a flight attendant at age 70, and that was the best job. And now I know what I was thinking about. Early on in my sobriety, I would just be filled with self-pity and jealousy and envy of you. That's all I would look at. And I would sit and say, I'm never going to go anywhere. I'm never going to do anything. So as it turned out, you know, I've been all over the world. And who knew? And I can't sit down and plan that out. But I do have a God, a higher power in my life now that when I get out of the way, I'm amazed. It's exciting. It's like an exciting journey, you know, to just be able to turn it over like that. Also along the way, I was around 15 years sober when I really started with pursuing, like, what is the spirituality for me? What is that journey? And that's when I met my third husband. There was another victim in between Joe and Ed, but when I met Ed, I really just believe he was, you know, he was sent to me. He was really a wonderful man. So is Joe, by the way. But Ed and Joe has the absolute best wife. Her name is Patty. And but anyway, Ed, you know, we had, you know, we just met at an AA meeting. I used to kind of hang out outside the men's room, like, ooh, it's gonna come along. And there's Ed. And so we got married. By the way, when I met Ed, we started dating, and he said, I never want to get married again. And he had been married once, and he had not been married in 15 years. And I said, okay, no problem. And I meant it. And then I'd go over to his apartment and bring one of my pots and pans and put it away in his kitchen and kind of like, what? And he went to the international convention in Toronto, I think, and I did not go. I went to visit a sober friend in Northern California, but when he came back from there, he was just staring at me really weird. And I'm like, what? He was just staring at me and walking toward me. And then he said, will you marry me? And I said, okay. So that was it. And then what he told me was that he was at the International and Lois Wilson walked across the stage. And he said in his head, this thought came and it said, marry Nancy. And then he said, he shook his head and said, go away, bad thought, go away, bad thought. And so, but then we were both sponsored by Clancy. And then he said he came, well, he asked me, and then he called Clancy, and Clancy said, fine, just don't elope. And 9 days later, we got married in Clancy's office on Skid Row at the Midnight Mission. And that's where we got married. And I knew a judge down in downtown. He came over. Clancy stood up for Ed. His bookkeeper stood up for me. The guys at the mission made us a cake, and That was our wedding, and we were married for 27 years. He passed away around 10 years ago, but he was the one that really got me headed in a different direction with my thinking and my spiritual program. He, you know, I'd come home, and I'd be complaining about something, and he'd go, "What about God?" And I'd go, "What about God?" So he suggested to me that I read the book Sermon on the Mount, and so I and he gave me one, which I love, and I have it. And he wrote, you know, he wrote in the front of it to me, and it's dated, and I think it's dated 1983 or something like that. And so I read it. I went through it, and I read it, and it was pretty hard for me to, you know, I had to read it and reread it, but I got through that book. And then he turned me on to some other, you know, spiritual, Emmett Fox and Anthony DeMello and things like that. And so I love this journey. It's so much easier than what I was doing, you know, the way I was trying to do things from time to time. And I write positive affirmations. I've been doing that for years. Rather than, you know, as I said before, about begging God for something or telling God what I want. But I just write them out in, you know, some of them are practical things and some are just like along spiritual lines. And, you know, thank you, God, for the peace I feel in my heart, or thank you, God, for the love I feel for others. And thank you, God, for when I wanted to lose weight, for, you know, that I weigh a certain amount. And Thank you, God, for helping me to learn Spanish, or just whatever it is that I want to do. That really helps me, and to turn my thinking, you know, got turned around into a more positive direction. I don't think I even realized how negative my thinking was, you know, at times. But anyway, so Ed and I had a great life. We lived in California, and then he was offered a job in Minnesota, and I had lived here my whole life, and I said, why not? And you know, we had been in the same home group for 15 years, and which is fine, you know, but it was good. It was a good change for us, and we moved to Minnesota, and I ended up living there for 31 years. And Ed and I were able, you know, after we'd been there a couple years and we were sponsoring some people, we were able to start a meeting there. And, you know, I know it's all God. There is no doubt in my mind. Ed and I didn't go there and say, let's go to Minnesota and start a really good meeting. It turns out it's a good meeting, and it's still going on, and it's 33 years old. But it was, I mean, I just give God credit for every single thing. We, you know, it wasn't our idea. We were just asked to do something, and we did it. And I'm so grateful for those, you know, opportunities to God. The other great gifts that God has given me is like sponsoring a lot of people. And that's because, I mean, they help me more than I help them. And I get to listen to, you know, what's going on in their life. It keeps me from thinking about myself. And it really, you know, I wasn't joking before. I do have some time. I have some tools, but I do wake up in the middle of the night and I have the monkey brain going on. And, you know, as time has gone on in my life, and like I'm getting older, obviously, you know, then, you know, there's other things, you know, that come up in my mind. And so, you know, the reason that here I go again. I won't remember what I was talking about, but the reason that I moved back here 4 years ago was because, you know, Ed had been gone, and I was doing all the AA stuff, and I was living in an apartment, and I would be out all day. I'd be at meetings every night, and then I'd come home, and I would feel or hear what was going on. And what it was saying, is this all there is? Because I'm getting older, you know, there aren't that many years left, but you know, is this all there is? So I realized I was a little bit on the sad side. The other thing is I've eliminated words from my vocabulary the best I can that are negative words. And if I do feel sad, I use that word instead of depressed. I don't like to say that. And that kind of thing. I've just become very aware of the words that I use and the way that I think. But so I that was going on. And is this all there is? And so I was feeling a little bit blah. And I talked to God. And I would say, you know, I really think that I need to move. And I love the ocean. And I love horses. But, you know, then there's like financially some things aren't possible, you know, to live by the ocean and all that kind of stuff. But I just talk to God now like God is my very best friend. And who, because God knows me better than anybody else knows me and understands me. And this God that I have now has more resources, you know, and can see the big picture and has solutions that I don't have. So I like to just talk to God and lay things out like that. So first of all, I thought, well, my friend Pat and our other friend Susie, who passed away last year, but they lived in Palm Desert. And I would talk to them, and I'd always think, Pat and Susie are having way more fun than I'm having. So I think that maybe I better move to Palm Desert. So I actually gave notice. I packed some of the boxes. I got rid of a lot of stuff. And I went to Palm Desert to figure out where I was going to live. It's a little far from the ocean, but I was going to settle for it because I really wanted to be with people that I've known for a long time, too. It's very, very, very comforting. So I went there, and it was in May, and it was 108 degrees. And Susie had a little get-together of women and the night before, so we're so happy you're going to be moving here. And I went to sleep, and I woke up in the morning, and I said, I cannot live here. I told them, I'm not living here. So, too hot. So I went back to Minnesota. I said, okay, God, that didn't really work out. Now where should I live? What are we going to do here? So I was, you know, I will sit quietly, whatever you want to call it, prayer, meditation, whatever. I'll sit quietly, and I'm able to listen, and I have, like, I love the word awareness now, you know, just sit and be quiet. What's going on? And so this, it just popped into my head one day. I had been to this place years and years ago, and it's called Leisure World, Seal Beach Leisure World. And I'm not going to make my bad jokes about it. Okay, I am. In Leisure World, it's very beautiful. They have Viagra Falls, and they have Lake Placid at Leisure World. So it's a senior community. All right. So I called someone who was in real estate. Gosh, if I start saying who it was, then I'm going to get off on a whole other tangent here. So anyway, I found out that Leisure World would be a good place for me to move to. So I was able to move there. And it's affordable. And then I went to a meeting. You know, I love to go to meeting, different meetings too. Now I live there now, but it wasn't like I have to go to a certain meeting because my friends are there. I love going to meetings where I don't know people. So I went to a meeting right after I moved there, and I sat next to a lady, and she said to me, "Do you like horses?" And I said, "Yes, I love horses." And she said, "Well, my husband and I have horses, and we live in Orange, and do you want to ride?" So I just rode with her again last week, you know. I just go out there and ride horses with her, and then I go walk on the beach and walk on the pier, and it's just this beautiful life for me. But so that's that. Now, where should I go now? So I do love my life. I'm satisfied. I'm content. I'm grateful with the life that I have. And for so long, I was telling Pat a story this morning about many, many years ago when I had to go over to my sponsor's house and talk to her because of something bad I had done. And I had a very, very old broken down car, which I was embarrassed to be seen in. And so I parked it way around the block. And I went in her house to talk to her, and her sponsor, Marion, was there. And Marion scared me anyway. And now my sponsor, Lou, at the time said, Marion needs a ride home. I thought I was going to die. I am not kidding. I mean, I could feel that shock that went through my body at the time. Like, not only I hate, you know, my car was bad, it was parked around the block. Why? And then it got worse. My life has just unfolded and unfolded. I mean, I'm going to back up to for a minute with this husband number two, because his name was Tom. And, you know, it's just one of my experiences. And so we got married. I didn't really want to get married, and he probably didn't either, but we had a big AA wedding. And it was not good. It was a lot of arguing, yelling, fighting, carrying on. It was not good. My friends can attest to that, because Pat and her husband Vince had to stay over there till midnight one night to wait for me to come home. They were supposed to be eating dinner at my house, and Tom and I had a big fight before the company was coming, and I saw a butcher knife in the sink, and I just pictured that I was going to pick it up in a minute. So instead, I got in my car and left. And the company came to dinner, and I wasn't there. And I think Pat and Vince thought, you know, we better just stick around until Nancy gets back. And you know, we just, like, they just mean a lot to me, my friends. And, you know, that's the way that was for 3 years. And I ended up trying to make that work, because that's what we do. I want to make this work. You know, how's it going to look and all that kind of stuff. And I was sober 12 years or so, and I thought I was going to lose my mind, because it wasn't working, and I was so miserable, and I'm sure he was too. And the kids had gone to live with Joe and Patty. When Joe would call me and tell me that he and Patty would love to have the boys live with them, I would think, there's no way, I'm their mother, and I can't let that happen. But since I'm really trying to talk to God and give God, you know, control over my life, I had this thought that came in that said, Nancy, why don't you do what's right for the boys? You know, Joe and Patty can provide them with a more stable home than you can. And, you know, that's not me, because I'm not able to think and be that way. So that's what happened. The boys were there living with Joe and Patty, and I was still trying to make it work. And one day I bought a one-way ticket to Hawaii. Two of my brothers lived in Hawaii. I sponsored about 20 women then. I wrote them notes. And they said, the notes said, I'm leaving, I'm never coming back, I'm having a really hard time. And I went to Hawaii, but right when I got off the airplane, I met the people from Alcoholics Anonymous and made friends with people there and went to meetings, and I got 3 jobs. I lived with one of my brothers. I worked, my first job was in a bar, which I'm a terrible barmaid, but it was the only job I could get. And I 12-stepped the customers, too, while I worked there. But it was a terrible job. And then I had another job on the weekend, in the morning, early in the morning at a bakery. And I was in the back. There's at the bar, this couple came in, and the woman was pregnant. And I said, oh, you're going to have a baby pretty soon. Yeah, pretty soon. And then I was at the bakery, and the bell rang, and I came out front, and I saw the lady, and she goes, you work here too? I go, yeah, I work here in the morning. And then that weekend, I was at the market giving out fake samples of abalone, and the pregnant lady came around the corner, And she goes, what? She goes, you're going to be the nurse when I wake up in the hospital. But I stayed in Hawaii. I did AA and I went to work. And I stayed there for 8 months. And what I did there was I did a lot of writing and searching, like, you know, what I have learned from every experience that I've had in my sobriety, good, bad, indifferent. I need to learn from it. There's a reason for this. There's something inside me that made me react so bad to this situation or whatever. It's not you. It's, you know, it's me. So I spent a lot of time in Hawaii doing some writing and trying to figure out what went on and why did I marry him and what happened and you know what. And so I did that. And I went back and you know, we were divorced by that time. And I was able to ask him to go to lunch. And I was able to make amends for leaving the way that I did. And I felt, you know, justified, right? There's reasons. But when I didn't have to go over all of that with him. I just made amends for my part of it. And that felt really good. It just feels really good to be little by little growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm still doing it, you know. And our program is so absolutely divinely inspired. We've been reading some of the history. It's divinely inspired. And so if you get a chance, you know, read some of the books about Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson and pass it on and the old timers and things. It makes me so very grateful for what we have here. So anyway, I let's see. When my husband Ed, you know, we were living in Minnesota and doing our AA, and I go back there now, and I still sponsor a lot of those people there, which I'm so grateful, as I said, for that. And I go back there and I visit and I hang out with them. And if it's, you know, I try to coordinate it with when one of them is celebrating a birthday or something like that, an AA birthday. But so my husband Ed got Parkinson's. And, you know, little by little it kind of takes over. And your body, and he was getting sicker and sicker. And I had to take him to the hospital one night, and he I didn't really know what to do. Again, I go, God, what should I do? How do I handle this? Because I was still working as a flight attendant, and I would come and go, and I got my friends, our AA friends would come over and look in on him and try to take care of him. But toward a couple weeks before he died, he had fluid on his heart or something, and I came home from a meeting and he told me he was having a hard time breathing. So I took him to ER, and you know, I was really like, I kept saying, you know, God, what should I do? How do I take care of him? And when, you know, I used to get out of bed in the morning and I would get on my knees and talk to God, and I would say, I feel like I'm 9 years old. I don't know how to do this kind of thing. But then I would just keep doing it. But I took him to ER, and there was a young doctor there, and he said, he checked him out, and he said, you know, I don't really know what's going on with him, but he put his hand on my arm, and he said, I'm going to admit him. And I was just so grateful for that because I didn't know what else to do at the time. And then so the next day, a cardiologist came in, and there was a social worker there, and I really wanted Ed to be able to go to a rehab so they could try to help him. But it's, you know, with all the paperwork and everything, it's just kind of hard to make that happen sometimes. So the doctor, the cardiologist, the social worker, first of all, she said to me, you know, he needs to be here 3 days before he could go to rehab or Medicare won't pay it. I said, okay. And I walked outside the room and I went into the parking lot and I said, God, I need help. And then I came back in the room and the cardiologist was in there and she said, I'm going to keep him for 3 days. And I said, you know, he wasn't admitted until after midnight on Sunday. No, it's the first time she said, don't worry. And I said, he wasn't admitted till after midnight on Sunday. And she said, I told you not to worry. And she put her hand on my arm too. You know, and it was like, I can't, there are things happen that I myself cannot figure out. But I know that, you know, more and more and more, God takes over when I just say, I need you to help me here. And he did pass away a couple weeks after that. He actually wanted to go on hospice because he didn't want to live the way he was living and falling down and being the way that he was. And so, you know, I prayed about it. He prayed about it. He was sober. And, you know, God gave me what I needed to be able to let him go and with dignity the way that he wanted to. And the last couple of weeks of his life were just the room. He was in this rehab, and the AA people would just come over and bring food and hang out. And you know, it was actually beautiful. And then when he passed away, I just had this celebration of life party with all the alcoholics, and it didn't really put a lot of thought into it. We just did it before a meeting. Everybody he sponsored talked, and it was really just beautiful, and I'm thankful, you know, that I was able to honor his wishes. So one more story I want to tell you. Well, about a year after Ed died, you know, I was in Minnesota, and, you know, I was missing him, and I opened the mail one day, and there was a letter from a man that I didn't know, and his name was on the, you know, the envelope, the return address. And so I opened the letter, I started reading this letter, and it was saying things like, this letter is about something that happened in November of 1960, and I don't want to hurt you or, you know, cause you any discomfort. And I'm not understanding what this letter is about. And I read it. I just kept reading, you would be proud of me. And finally I got to the end and I understood that this letter was from the baby that I gave up for adoption. And he's now, he was 53 years old when I got the letter. And so he invited me to, you know, you can call, you can send me a letter, you can email if you're comfortable, but if you choose not to, that's fine too. And so, you know, of course, I was taken aback, really. And so that night I wrote him an email and I just said, it's nice to meet you, Tom. And, you know, thank you for your letter. And so what ended up happening is that we decided to, or maybe I did, I didn't want to just run out. I was in Minnesota and he lived in California. I didn't want to just run out and meet him. So we got to know each other through emailing quite often, 2, 3, 4 times a week. And eventually I said, by the way, Tom, alcoholism runs very strong in my family. So, excuse me. After about 6 months, one of his emails said that he and his wife were going to vacation in Park City, Utah, and they had a condo for about 8 days, 9 or whatever, and I was welcome to join them for part of the time or whatever I wanted. So, you know, I decided that it's probably time that I met him in person. We had exchanged pictures. So I got my plane ticket, and I just remember flying into Salt Lake, and I was just sitting on the airplane, just rigid, and I was just saying, okay, God, you got this, you got this, you got this. And I was really grateful that I didn't have to take anything to make me feel more calm. And that, So I got off the plane and I went to the escalator, and there he was at the bottom of the escalator, and he had this beautiful bouquet of flowers, and I had a little present I had made for him. It's a little baby rattle sterling silver, and it said, love from your first mom. I had found out in when we were emailing that the mom that he had passed away when he was in his 20s, and he still had his dad. And so I was thinking, I said, is your dad remarried? And then I was thinking, if he hasn't remarried, then I could marry him, and I could be your biological stepmother. So, I, you know, I was going down the escalator, and I was just like, it occurred to me when I was about halfway down that I didn't tell him any lies about myself. And I was talking before about, you know, putting myself down for what I haven't done, that kind of thing. I didn't tell him any lies about myself. I didn't buy any new clothes. I didn't do anything different to change myself when I was going down to meet him because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has helped me to love myself as I am. And that's one of the greatest gifts that I have been given, to that realization, really. Just be who you are. I spent years wishing I was taller. One day I thought, you're not. So stop it. Although driving here, Pat and I, we were listening to the radio, and there was a doctor on there who was talking about putting extenders in people's, in making you taller. But it costs $100,000, right? So anyway, I met Tom. I met his wife. We are very, very close today. We've seen each other quite a bit. He came to Minnesota several times. This is kind of another God thing, but years ago, I had this throat problem, and I went to the doctor, and I ended up having to have a biopsy, and so the doctor told me he would call me, and he called me, you know, a couple days later, and he said, yeah, it's malignant, so... And he was telling me all this stuff to do, and I didn't like the words he was telling me, you know, oncologist and PET scan and all this stuff. But here's the thing, so I wrote it all down, and then I was due to hear a fifth step. Like, in 15 minutes, I was going to go to this lady's house. So she's a nurse, and I called her, and I said, I'm going to be a couple minutes late because Dr. Frake just called me. And, you know, this is what's going on. And she screeched at me. She said, you can't hear my fifth step. You have cancer. And I said, it takes more than cancer to get out of a fifth step. So I'll be there, okay? So, and it's all fine. I just get dry. But he came when I told Tom. He flew to Minnesota, and he stayed with me when I was doing radiation. And I've stayed with them many times, and they do live in Park City now. I love him. I love his wife. And I feel just so fortunate. His dad passed away about 2 or 3 months ago, and I went to the memorial for his dad. So my life is so rich. I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful. And it's really been wonderful being with all of you today. Thank you.
Additional Encore audio archive recordings are available at www.12stepTapes.com. We request you not upload this recording to the major free outlets. We are happy to allow free listening on our own site with a subscription service. Contact us on www.12stepTapes.com for more information.